Migrant Matters Radio.
Escucha Asuntos del Inmigrante. Aquí nosotros somos apasionados en explorar asuntos de migración, de los trabajadores inmigrantes y de la gente que no tiene estatus migratorio, y dando a conocer las historias de individuos que nosotros no podemos oír en los medios convencionales. Los asuntos del inmigrante se centran en desacreditar mitos de migración, que a menudo han sido favorecidas por medios convencionales y la política actual de migración. Escúchanos el último viernes de cada mes, de 6 a 7 de la noche, por esta su emisora local, CFRU 93.3 FM.
You are listening to CFRU, radio worth taking your glasses off for.
Involves the display of our private work to other persons with a tendency towards the extravagant. Public exposure is our inner unfiltered thoughts, an opportunity to create work that places ourselves and makes that pleases ourselves and makes us excited. Our aim is to demonstrate our collective vision of what illustration is and what it can be.
There's a few words that I'd love for you to elaborate on. I want you to talk a bit more about what you mean by private work.
Okay. So our private work, I guess we're all coming from the background of illustration.
Okay.
That's kind of where we got our start, coming together at OCAS. And essentially, like, illustration entails making work for, like, clients, right? So you don't necessarily get to express yourself fully. Not exactly like fine art, where, you know, the artist is expected to just, you know, channel their inner vision.
Yeah, well, it happens sometimes, but most of the time you'll find yourself doing professional quality commercial work for an art director who directs the whole project.
Yeah, like they have the final say usually, right?
Yeah.
So even though there is that level of expression, you still have somebody to answer to. And I guess that happens with fine art as well, depending on what gallery you work with. But, yeah, this is kind of a chance for us. Like, what we mean about our private work is this is kind of a chance for us to jury as a group the kind of stuff that we do. And kind of we're really open-ended as a jury. And we just let our members kind of do whatever they believe in, so there's none of that kind of filtration process.
Yeah, like when during the process of that zine, one of our rules was basically we wouldn't ask somebody to change one of their pieces.
Yeah,
just because we wanted them to have a full 100% art direction on their personal work.
Yeah, because you don't really get a chance to do that a lot, you know. So
Can you describe the zine for folks who can't see it because they're listening to the radio? In great detail?
Well, basically, it's a photocopied zine. All the pages are photocopied. There's all seven members of Public Exposure, plus we open for submission for all other people who wanted to post some work, and every page has a piece.
Yeah, there's some
centerfold.
There's some spreads as well. Like, there's we were kind of open with the format. Some people did a single page here and there. Some people did spreads of drawings that are kind of open to interpretation. We kind of emphasize the handmade aspect of the zine by making like a silkscreen cover. So it's kind of got a bit of the traditional zine where there is photocopy and it is like hand done, but we kind of tried to raise the bar a little bit by having, you know, like a nicely silkscreen cover, and trying to make like a really quality self-published, artifact.
Silkscreen all of 250 of them. Well, we have, which was a pretty like really long rough night, but
you did them all in one night.
Well, we did it over a couple of weeks with no sleep because we had to set up our own studio. We worked completely outside of any other institution. We did it all in our own apartments and basements and attics and wherever we could.
After hours.
Yeah. So we had to set everything up from scratch to do this. And that was probably the most exciting and the most frustrating part, just going from nothing to having facilities that we could create this stuff with.
But the result is amazing, though. Like, you've seen the digital version, but the physical book is way, way more interesting.
Well, how big is the physical book?
It's half, 8.5 by 11.
Okay.
That's right, yeah.
So the cover is of an image of, is it a police officer taking down a superhero?
That's right, yeah.
And
it's a Power Ranger, I believe. I think
it is.
Kasim here designed the cover, and we worked together to kind of, like, I did the back illustration, which kind of elaborates on the front.
Yeah.
And I guess the kind of stuff that inspired us to go with the safety theme was, we kind of came to it by going to other openings ourselves and seeing the other zines that were being produced. And we just decided, like, right there at a show over a couple of beers to put our own book together. and we decided to choose a theme right then and there. And the thing that sprung to my mind immediately were old safety manuals, old safety instruction booklets, because the idea of, like, the thing I love about zines is zines can be anything. They can be information that's useful or completely frivolous. And like if you go and check out places like the Zine Library at the Transac, you'll see everything from instructional booklets to you know, just collections of drawings. So even though I knew we were going to do a collection of drawings, I kind of wanted us to do something with the idea of an instructional booklet. You know, like I wanted to give it a sense of urgency. Like, so yeah, you should look at this for your safety. But really, it was just like an off-the-cuff decision. And we collected the work pretty loosely around that. But it kind of ended up channeling a bunch of the stuff that was happening with the G20.
Yeah.
I think that was definitely, like, the work I did for that, for this zine, definitely channeled that, because that was happening, you know? So, and that's what having, like, an open publication allows you to do. It allows you to really, like, tap into what's going on just, you know, around you and what you're kind of feeling at the time, and make and just make artwork based on that, rather than, you know, trying to expand on some sort of you know, other kind of notion more artificially, you know.
You won't see it until it's too late, rolling from you in some
to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. My name is Sarah, and I am interviewing Dmitry Bondarenko and Kassem Ahmad, talking about the Public Exposure Collective's first issue of their zine called Safety. It's very exciting, and it's being launched tonight at the White House, which is 277.5 Augusta Avenue in Kensington Market. It's featuring all kinds of music. You should definitely go and get yourself a copy of the zine, and it starts at 8 p.m. I hope lots of folks go. And without further ado, here is the second half of the interview. I do want to let you know that you just heard a song by Ray Spoon, Love is a Hunter. Can you describe for the listeners a bit more of the images inside the zine?
Sure. I mean, we have everything from pages of comic books to just like full illustrated spreads to little like vignettes. Images, and some of the images are completely open-ended. One of our members, Natalie, she does kind of these very cryptic-looking drawings with a lot of fading, a lot of collage. Well, some of the stuff kind of hits you over the head, like Cameron Stott's images, which have captions with them. And yeah, we're just scrolling through now, and a lot of the other imagery is just kind of open-ended but sarcastic in its content. Like the stuff with the cops, the work that I made was all kind of a comment on, are the police really, you know, there for your safety or for some other some other purpose, you know? So yeah, there's a whole range of work, and a lot of it, probably most of it, is left up to the interpretation. So it's kind of hard to really nail it down. But I guess that's what makes looking at it fun, because each person can kind of take something away with them.
It's interesting because I feel like the images relate to each other. Like when I looked at it, I was like, I wonder if. At first, I wondered if it was in part an exquisite corpse exercise, where the drawing that came before it, somebody took that and had to relate to it somehow.
Well, there's, you know, we've definitely, you know, we started this this group of us up during our thesis here at OCAD, and one of the things that we would constantly do would be just meet up in bars and let off the steam by just doing drink and draw sessions, you know. So I think all of the members have worked with each other before, and we were all in the same year, so we know each other's work pretty intimately.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of get in each other's heads in a way, you know. Like even during the thesis, I remember having work that, having other people's work inspire me in completely indirect ways. So.
Well, also people who are members of the group, we tend to meet on a regular basis fairly often. So we do discuss and phone each other and talk about.
Yeah.
And the work that's in the zine, it's not work that we had previously done before the zine.
Right.
We set a team and we all decided to work towards having a concept that worked with it.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, the fact that we did jury it after all, it meant that we picked things that related with each other. And we also edited it so that the corresponding images work together. We looked at it
from
both aesthetic sense, you know, like trying to balance dark against line, trying to make it a really pleasant thing to look at. Along with that, you know, trying to keep a theme together, you know, even though it's so open.
Yeah, for example, there's an image of a hunter with a bear, and then the next image is of a similar-looking man in Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah, there's a lot of, little inside jokes. And some of the stuff was definitely made, was definitely inspired by other content. We had submissions rolling in throughout the month that we were working on this. And that's definitely one of the most fun things, just picking up on an idea somebody else presents and running with it.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit more about how you operate as a collective?
Well, this is our first publication, and the way we went about it was we decided to schedule weekly meetings where things had to be done. You know, like we'd lay out obligations for all the members and split the workload between us. Because we all knew that this project, any of us could probably do this on our own, but not in the time that we laid out. And so we very carefully just, plotted that out.
We got to be honest also, at first, we weren't that organized. Like, we did meet, but, I mean, our meetings, we discussed a lot of things, and then we'd find ourselves repeating ourselves every meeting. And then, with time, we decided to, write down everything we say in our meetings and, put real schedules and put up times and give information away to all the members and make sure, organization-wise, we were doing our best.
Yeah.
And it got happening pretty fast after that.
Yeah, absolutely. The best thing was the schedule. It worked. We also picked people who, after a while, we knew who was going to be interested and who wasn't. So we picked people who definitely had the same fire in their bellies as we did. So, and then every week we would just go through either volunteer to take things on or delegate to our members to take things on. We picked up momentum really fast. You know, the schedule we laid out was kind of merciless, but, meeting once a week, every week, we could meet our goals and just keep on each other's tails about this stuff and just inspire each other. So that's kind of how how we ended up at this point. You know, the show's coming up this Thursday, and we just finished selling all 250 of the zines on Sunday, and we just couldn't believe it. Like, a month ago, this was all just notes on a pad, and now it's translated into whole boxes of zines.
Yeah. Did you do this in mind with the fact that July is officially zine month?
We're kind of like zine virgins. Well, not really after this, I guess. This is us kind of moving through that. But
I think we wanted to make a zine as fast as possible.
We
set ourselves like tight deadlines, and we weren't thinking about July. We were just thinking about, like, if we can't make a zine in a month, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And it came out to be July.
And, yeah, exactly. Like, it was more accidental than anything, right? We weren't, we were definitely inspired by zine culture, but I don't think we were conscious of that. I mean, it's great that we're on time like that. That's a surprise.
Why did you want to make a zine so fast?
Well, partially to see if we could.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good test of what we can do. There's all of us are, I think, all of the main members, not necessarily the contributors, but the main members are illustrators.
Well, we're talking about the members, but the viewers, like the people listening probably don't know. I just want to say that the seven members are basically Ali Hall, Dimitri, who's talking with me right now, Javier Ortiz, Jesse Durham, myself, Kasem, Matt Janin, and Taj Nabani.
So that does it for our interview today with the Public Exposure Collective. Check out their stuff at the zine launch tonight at the White House, 277.5 Augusta Avenue in Kensington Market if you're in Toronto. July is zine month, and the Toronto Zine Library also last night did a 24-hour zine challenge. So keep your eyes peeled for stuff about that, and I will also give you more updates on that.
The C.J. Mountfort Centre is a resource centre for people of colour and Aboriginal peoples at the University of Guelph. This is where we all unite. The Mountfort Centre, located in McKinnon Room 54 and 55, provides a microwave, two computers and a fridge, among other resources. The centre is a place to study, sleep or relax. It's a place for great conversation. If you want to vent, share experience, good or bad, this is the place for you. You meet great people, and it's just an overall awesome environment. Don't hesitate to drop in anytime before 10 p.m., and you're sure to meet a smiling face. For more information, call us at 519-824-4120, extension 56911, or visit us at www.uoguelph.ca/Mountfort or join our Facebook group.
Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News.
Grassroots news from coast to coast to coast.
In this edition, we focus on the perspectives and stories of First Nations communities with special features on the 20th anniversary of the so-called Oka Crisis, the Northern Gateway Pipeline, and more.
And that's important to me. Make sure that my children, my grandchildren, have a place that they can call their home, their homeland. Because this is our homeland. People keep trying to take our land even today.
I'm Lauren.
And I'm Jessica from CKUT Radio in Jojage, also known as Montreal.
First in national news.
In Ontario this week, a popular program to promote solar installations plunged into turmoil. The government program, which paid farmers and rural Ontarians up to 80 cents a kilowatt hour for energy they pumped back into the grid, recently announced it is reneging on that deal and offering rural, primarily ground-mounted solar installations at only 58 cents per kilowatt hour. Urban dwellers can still profit at the 80-cent rate for rooftop solar panels. Farmers and investors are calling it a breach of contract that discriminates against rural communities. Mike Arts, a farmer in St. Mary's, generates solar power and installs panels and systems for others through New Horizon Energy.
Now that they've dropped the rate, it puts it down after maintenance and interest to about 4.5%. And basically, anybody who has that kind of money is not going to borrow at 4.5%. So I think the ground mount trackers and the ground mount fixed business is pretty much going to stop. Now that they've knocked back the price per kilowatt to 58.8 cents, that investment doesn't pay. And now that we have to go back to the roofs, and I mean, you're probably eliminating at least 80% of the people in the rural area for making that investment, because they just don't have the proper roof to put it on. No one's decided to go forward at 58.8 cents for a ground mount, so we've actually lost customers that do have an offer to connect, but they just don't feel confident that the OPA will hold to the, you know, the contract or the agreement, and they feel the OPA has lost their integrity, and they're not willing to make that risk for, you know, 11-12% return.
Energy Minister Brad Duguid is allowing for a 30-day public comment period. Already, a petition promoted by microfitaction.com has collected over 500 signatures in 2 days.
This year, Walk for Justice is currently underway. The Walk for Justice continues in its tradition since 2006 to honor women who had died through violence or are still missing for over 40 years.
Participants are gathering signatures for a petition demanding a public inquiry and accountability in the cases the group has already presented to all the politicians and leadership nationwide. Many, if not the majority, of these cases are of missing or murdered Indigenous women. According to missingjustice.ca, up to 3,000 Indigenous women have gone missing or been murdered in Canada since 1980. Of the 582 officially recorded cases, over 300 remain unsolved.
Gladys Radek, one of organizers of the walk, spoke with CKDU's Melissa Albiani last year on the urgency of the important walk.
It's time for all women to take a good look at what's going on around them and realizing that we as the life bearers of society have to start working together to stop this ongoing, what we call genocide. We know that violence sees no color, but we need people to start coming together and saying that this is not going to be accepted anymore, and start, getting people to get these programs that are so much needed, and start fighting for our funding for our women's programs, because everything's being taken away.
The Walk for Justice started June 22nd from Kamloops, BC, and is set to arrive in Winnipeg July 28th.
Next, Joel Bard with news from Labrador and Quebec.
Innu, from Manimikush-Lac-Jean, a reserve near Schefferville, Quebec, continue to blockade two mines in western Labrador. Their blockade began on June 11th. And in a recent show of support for the protest, the Manimikush-Lac-Jean Innu have re-elected Riel McKenzie as their chief. Chief McKenzie says that the blockade will continue until fundamental land claim issues are addressed. These, he says, must occur at the provincial and federal level. Chief McKenzie wants the blockade to bring about an Innu land settlement in Labrador, one that includes Quebec Innu. As of now, Quebec Innu land claims in Labrador are not recognized by either the provincial government of Newfoundland and Labrador or the federal government. McKenzie wants to see this changed. He says that his ancestors' territory encompassed parts of Labrador and included the land on which the blockaded mines sit. This is Joel Bard, reporting for Groundwire.
In other national news,
a recent purchase by Black Press spelled the end for four small town papers. The Nelson Daily News and three other small town BC papers will be forced to close this month by new owner, Victoria-based Black Press. The Nelson Daily News, the Prince Rupert Daily News, the Kelsnell Advisor and the 100 Mile Advisor have all been slated for closure. The Nelson Daily News has been publishing since 1902. Catherine Fisher from CJLY, Kootenay Co-op Radio, has the story.
Residents of Nelson, BC will lose their local daily newspaper on Friday, July 16th. The local paper of record, which has published in town for 109 years, was deemed unviable by Victoria-based purchaser Black Press. The press recently purchased a package of 11 newspapers previously owned by Glacier Media Corporation. Many locals in Nelson are upset about Black Press's decision. Andre Carroll, longtime radio and print commentator and author of the book Citizen Hall, Making Local Democracy Work, had this to say.
It's just one more step in a direction that I think we're going in this country in marginalizing democracy. That's what it amounts to.
The Nelson Daily News has been